Are you still with me, young people?
Yes.
There were no woos this time. It's a very sad woos. It's a tired group. This is the session where you are going to begin to fall asleep.
No!
And in the last session, it's going to be the struggle of your life. Tomorrow morning, you will be comatose. But remember this, you have to clean your rooms.
Yes!
So that should bring out some anger feelings in you because you're associating it with your moms and dads. Clean up your room. I can't believe you live like that. How can your room look the way it does? And so on and so forth, right? And I'm sure that only happens with children back home, not in this place. But if it does, then if that invigorates you to get you going, clean your rooms. And also around this place too. If you see cups and so on the ground, pick them up. Those are like ecclesial problems in a way. You were talking about poetry and the different figures of speech and so on that are used, the grammatical constructions, etc., etc. You're talking about all those things. When you walk by a problem that's on the ground because you didn't make it or you didn't create it, you might do the same thing in ecclesial life. So be attentive, young men, to the girl who picks up the cup she didn't throw on the ground and maybe another one. And go and pick up a couple of cups yourself. Because that's a nice trait. It's a good quality. It means, to a degree, that's the kind of individual who pitches in to look after problems that he or she didn't make. And if they're going to do that here, they will do that down the line also. But if they just walk on the cup and keep walking, what they've done is they've taken a problem and made it worse. They've now put their footprint on it. And that can happen in ecclesial life also, right? So be mindful of those little things. Watch carefully the little things. They are the clues to the real personality you're dealing with. Not the big things, it's the little things, right? Okay, Ruth chapter 2. Naomi had a kinsman of her husband's, a mighty man of wealth, of the family of Elimelech, and his name was Boaz. Now, there's a lot going on in that verse that we won't look at. We're just going to move on. Right? And may I make a suggestion to young brethren? As I become an old brother over time and senile, I can say these things more and more and take this liberty and this license. When you get up to give a talk, do not spend the first 15 minutes giving a dissertation on how difficult it would be to say everything that needed to be said if you had the opportunity to say it, because after all, you cannot compress the book of Revelation into a single session, and it would be very, very impossible to try to do that. But however, at the same time, we all derive a benefit by doing the study that is required in order to give the talk, and that's something that we appreciate. Forget all that nonsense and just get on with it. Nobody wants to hear that stuff. You're not there to say that stuff. You've got a few precious moments to say something. Don't make it rubbish. Don't make it introductory piffle. Get straight to what needs to be said, right? Just start. Do not go to another ecclesia and give 16 minutes of greetings that nobody gave you to give.
I'd like to bring the greetings of Toronto West Ecclesia, who told me to pass on my greetings, though they didn't, but I think I should, because that's what we do. And, you know, my dear wife wishes she could be here, but she isn't. And my daughters wish they could be here, but they're not.
You don't need to say all that stuff. I mean, I've said it to you now, I know. But this is by way of telling you, don't say these things. They just waste time. So we're in chapter 2. All right? Naomi had a kinsman of her husband's. The kinsman means an acquaintance. It could be a distant relation, right? So Naomi's husband Elimelech had what? A second cousin? An uncle? A nephew? We don't know what. But his name is Boaz. And the name Boaz, it's a beautiful name. It means in him is strength. And that almost reminds us of one of the Psalms, where in Psalm 80, A man is referred to as the man that God made strong for himself, referring to Christ. And we'll see that in this chapter there are a couple of things that remind us of Christ. We call them types or shadows, right? Boaz, his name means in him is strength. Now, how does he show his strength? In a very unique way. It says, "And Ruth the Moabitess said unto Naomi, let me now go to the field and glean ears of corn after him, in whose sight I shall find grace." That's very interesting, isn't it? Very interesting. Why is it that nobody in the ecclesia was coming to give them food? Why is it that nobody was helping them? I mean, they've come back. People know they have nothing. People know this is an old sister and a young Moabitess. How are they going to look after themselves? Why weren't people looking after them? What could their attitude have been? I'm bitter and I'm going back to Moab. At least we had food to eat in Moab. But that's not the attitude. Sometimes in ecclesial life we have problems in our families and in our marriages and with our children. Or with our own individual spiritual struggles which we go through. Sometimes we can become very upset and very embittered because people didn't help us the way we needed to be helped or wanted to be helped. Oftentimes it can be tragic. We can be tragically without the assistance we need. Other times it's that we just, you know, we're upset because people aren't noticing that we're in pain and doing something about it. I'm going to give you a bit of information you need to bear in your head, young people. That is normal. It's not nice, it's not right, it's not the way it ought to be. But that's the normal experience of Christadelphian ecclesial life. People do not always jump in with their hands open to help you with your problem. They ought to, but they don't. When it doesn't happen the way you hoped it would, don't be embittered. Naomi and Ruth didn't say, you know what? We should be getting help. People should be here assisting us. They should be sharing their food with us. Surely people should be helping us. They decided they're going to do what they can to help themselves. And if you have a problem in your life, as a brother or sister, that you find you are left to deal with on your own, and you manage your way through it, do not then adopt bitterness towards the ecclesia. Remember what I told you about those interactions that sometimes betray the limitations of our own understanding and how we treat people that are different to us. And a theme in what we talked about was forgiveness. It is necessary for us when we see the look on somebody's face or hear the unkind or ridiculous comment or the inappropriate comment that is made to forgive. That's absolutely essential. And to not hold on to a bitterness that says, Christadelphians are like this. And then to start talking about the brotherhood as if it's a group of people out there. Well, Christadelphians such and such. You know, Christadelphians are hypocrites. Christadelphians have two faces. Christadelphians say one thing on the platform and they do something completely different off the platform. And that's what we can do. That isn't right. I don't see any of that with Naomi and Ruth. What happens is, Ruth gets up. Ruth gets up, the young foreign woman from a country that had a reputation for absolute immorality and looseness, and she decides, I'm going to get food for us. Now that is an exposure to vulnerability and risk that could only have been entered into if this was a young woman of faith. And where did she learn her faith? From an older sister who had grown in faith over time through trouble and trial and loss and grief and bereavement and devastation. That's how she learned. That's how she turned into a woman of faith. So that truly the woman that came back home was different to the woman that left. And she saw the hand of God in her life in every way. Ruth learned from her, watching. And when Ruth gets there, and no food is to be found after a while, Ruth says, look, I'm going to have to go out and get us some food. What she is doing, young brothers and sisters, is she is caring for her little ecclesia and taking care of it. She's taking care of what? An old woman. Now you just think of the responsibility that this young woman took on her shoulders. This is an old sister who is probably infirm, weak, not able to get out and do things. She has all the struggles and all the meltdown and all the physical deterioration that is associated with old age. And that's who she's in company with all the time, this young sister. How are you with the old brothers and sisters in your ecclesia? Do you even notice them? Do you just notice them when they do funny things or do things that are, you know, out of line with current reality? You know, the old brother opens his hymn book and he's singing a different hymn to everybody else as loudly as he can. Right? The old sister who's a bit deaf and she pokes her husband during the exhortation. She says, what is he, crazy or something? Did you hear what he just said? And the whole hall hears what's said by her that time. Do you look at them and laugh? Do you feel a sense of scornful feeling, you know, scorn towards them? Well, you shouldn't, you know, because that's exactly what you are going to be like one day. Just like that. You are going to have those same problems. And so what is necessary from you at this stage is to show kindness and respect to old brothers and sisters, to be interested in them, to want to go up and give them a kiss and say hello to them. Yes, which is what you should be doing. It doesn't matter that you smell the medicine on them and you think this makes me feel disgusted. How many of you have actually gone to see old grandmothers or grandfathers at nursing homes? Put your hand up. All right. Is it pleasant? Does it smell good? Do they look nice? Is it a place you go running into because it's a happy place to be? No, that's where death is happening. And it's good for you to see it. Because it slows down all of your sense of what you are owed in life, what you ought to have, what life really consists of. That aging process that leads to the complete dissolution of your life and everything that was solid that you relied on is where every one of you is headed. So when you see those old brothers and sisters at the meeting, treat them with love, with respect, honor them, spend some time talking to them, and look for young people that do that. Notice them. They're different to the rest. You know the other young people? As soon as they get to the meeting, where are they? They're straight up with their young friends, looking at what they're wearing, comparing what they've got on, right? Or they're looking at each other's, you know, hairdos, or talking about what they did that's outside of ecclesial life, and comparing notes and showing off with each other. Or their little clique that they only interact with. You don't use the word clique. I think you call it click. Click. Your little clique that you have over here. Go run into the ecclesia, you talk to them. You're only talking to them people. You're not talking to anybody else. Because you don't understand them other people. They're oldies. Right? You're just talking to the people that you can relate to. I will do anything to keep you up in this session. Right? Naomi was loved by Ruth. And she took good care of Ruth. And she even exposed herself to danger in order to take care of her. It says, she went and she came and she gleaned in the field after the reapers. And her hap was to light on. Now the Hebrew is very expressive. It says literally, her chance chanced to hit upon the field. As if to imply that there was no chance involved in this at all. This was all about God working unseen in the life of this young woman, guiding her. And so he brought her to the field of Boaz. She went, she came in, and this field belonged to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. Right? Behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem and said unto the reapers, "The Lord be with you." And they answered him, "The Lord bless thee." Now, isn't that what your boss says to you every morning, brother? Right? And isn't that what you say back to your boss? Right? It isn't, is it? The tradition for people that are in the workplace today is that everybody's boss is a moron. Doesn't deserve his job, is incompetent, and if only he could be gotten out of the way, you would do a better job in his place. Until you become somebody else's moron. Which is exactly what happens. Right? And that's not the way Christadelphian people should be behaving in the workplace. We need to learn the ability to submit quietly to the authority of who we are reporting to. And it's not about their personality, it's about their functional role and their position of authority over us. We're told that in 2 Peter, or 1 Peter chapter 2. We're told that in Ephesians chapter 5. We're told that in Colossians chapter 3. To submit to the people that we work for. But just look at this situation. Look at this employer who is full of God, even in his interactions with those that work for him. It says, "Then said Boaz unto his servant that was set over the reapers, Whose damsel is this?" And the servant that was set over the reapers answered and said, "It is the Moabitish damsel that came back with Naomi out of the country of Moab. And she said, I pray you, let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves. So she came and hath continued even from the morning until now that she tarried a little in the house." That means that she's been working all day long. All day long. Bent over, picking up little grains. Now, don't you imagine that there were hands full of grain all around the place? That's not what they did. It was a few grains that might fall off on the ground. So you had to work hard, and it hurt your back to do it, to pick up and see the little grains. You couldn't do it as an old person. You couldn't see the grains, and your back wouldn't be able to sustain the gleaning process. So she's been working very hard all day long to get a little food for her mother-in-law and for herself. Right? Now, if you want to take that and sort of apply as an allegory, use an analogy, say that this reminds you of something else, you could say that's the back-breaking labor of young brothers and sisters in learning and studying the truth for the strengthening of the ecclesia. God doesn't leave hands full of truths all around lying for us. We've got to go into the field of Scripture and glean and work hard at it. I know it sounds when some people come through that they just, you know, it's just coming into their heads. It's just all this easy stuff. And, oh, that person has a talent and ability to do that thing, right? There's some work that goes into speaking and studying. Anybody that does anything that is of any worth or value has to work very hard at it. And they don't know if what they've done is of any value at all. And that is as it should be. None of us should be walking off the platform, "Oh, that was pretty valuable, what I just did." Right? We shouldn't be thinking that. The gleaning in the field is hard work, it's Bible study. But we do it. We do it, why? To strengthen the ecclesia. Not our ego, not to strengthen our perception of how valuable and how wonderful we are, but to strengthen the ecclesia. That's why we speak. All right? We go on. And it says, the servant said that was set over the reapers tells him these things. And then Boaz says to Ruth, "Hearest thou not my daughter? Go not to glean in another field, neither go from hence, but abide here fast by my maidens. Let thine eyes be on the field that they do reap. Go after them." In other words, don't go with the young men that are reaping and follow them. I want you to be safe. You're a Moabitish woman, and I don't know what they will do. You go where the women are and follow after their reaping and pick up the grain that's left over. Right? He is so concerned about protecting her. Immediately, it's as if he sees her as a daughter and he's taking care of her. from then forward. And you ask yourself, how is it that this Jewish man, out of the blue, has a sense of compassion for this young Gentile Moabite woman from an indecent and immoral society? We react in different ways in our interactions with each other and other people, based on our upbringing, based on circumstances of the moment, based on what we have assumed is the way life is, based on our life's experiences. Something that's happened before that reminds us of this situation, we react now with the memory of that last situation. Sometimes also it has to do with our family circumstances. If you come from a broken home, you'll have a special compassion for kids that are young who are in families that are having a breakup or have broken up. And you'll be able to understand what those children go through and be able to help them with those things. How is it that this Jewish man had this immediate outflowing of compassion towards this young woman? Well, no doubt he knew about what had happened, how she had taken care of her mother-in-law. But there's more to the story. Matthew chapter 1. Matthew 1. The genealogy or the family tree of the Lord Jesus Christ, probably through Joseph in this particular chapter, though there's discussion on why is this genealogy different to the one in Luke that seems to go through his mother. But all that aside, it says in verse 5, and Salmon begat Boaz of Rahab. Rahab who? Rahab the harlot. Now, you're a human being, so think what human beings go through. You're a 10-year-old boy whose mother was a prostitute and who is now living in the land of Israel. And you have your little wrestling matches and fights with the other little boys living in the area. What are they likely to tell you about your mom? You're Rahab the harlot. What are the women of the country going to react like if they see one of their husbands go up and ask you a question about something? Maybe, you know, can you tell me where your husband is right now? How are they going to react? What if Rahab was a beautiful woman? It would be even worse. You know how it can be? That catty disposition that can come out? Don't pretend you don't know what I'm talking about, young ladies. You know, you look over at that girl. You look at her hair, which you wish you had. You look at her legs. You look at her face, her mouth, the spacing of her eyes, the breadth, the width, the length of her eyelashes. You look at all of that. You look at the way she talks. You look at the way the boys look at her. And what do you think? Oh, that's a nice girl. I'd like to be her friend. That's not what you think. You begin to look at how fat her ankles are. Then you look at the curvature of her body and you begin to find the flaws. And you hope and you wait somewhere deep inside of you to see her fall down in some way, so that you can really celebrate, right? There's that nastiness that can be a part of our interaction. The cutting down of other people who look too good, right? It happens with brethren too. Oh, brother such and such telling us how to live our lives from the platform, right? Then it turns out he kicks his cat every night. Right? And that's just by way of humor. And then there are worse things that happen. And because we put them on a pedestal, but something in us always was skeptical and wanted to see them knocked down into a ditch when they go through the meltdown of morality and so on and so forth that we are all struggling with, but theirs becomes public in a shameful way, we're quite happy to bury them in a ditch under the pedestal we had them on. That's in us. Rahab's mother was a woman. Rahab was a woman of faith. Boaz's mother. She saved the lives of the spies. But if she was a human being, surrounded by human beings, her life in Israel was not easy. Don't ever assume that these were people walking around speaking poetry and dressed in robes that somehow were a spiritual cut above you. They were just as catty, had the same predisposition for viciousness, competitiveness, ugly talking, cruelty, all of these things. Right in the ecclesia of the living God. Right? That's the way it was. When Boaz saw this young girl, who did he see? He saw his mother young again and remembered what she went through and how hard her life was and how lonely it was for her as a woman surrounded by the Israeli women and what they said. He remembered all of those things. He remembered everything that had ever been said to him as a little boy or a young boy. He's an old man because he calls her my daughter. So she's at least young enough to be his daughter, which would put him at least in his 40s or 50s. And he's not married. Well, why isn't he married? We're not told anything about a wife or children apart from Ruth. Why wasn't he married? I'm sure you can imagine the kinds of conversations that the men would have. Well, you know, Boaz is a very nice man. There's no doubt about that. He's spiritual-minded. He's got a good business. He's doing well. But boy, you know, that mother, that background, I don't know. I don't think I would want one of my daughters to marry him. And so he was alone, and he accepted the fact. At this stage, he would be alone through to the end of his life. He just accepted that. We're imagining things to see if we can flesh out the story. And perhaps that doesn't stretch things too much. Then he sees this girl. And what he's feeling for her is not romantic feeling. It's protection. I don't want her to go through what I saw my mother going through. I don't want to see her crying the way I saw my mother crying. I don't want to see the Israeli men making assumptions and how they interacted with her the way they did with my mother. And you can well imagine that's the kind of thing that would happen. So Boaz is going to protect her in every way he can. And he also says to her, don't go in to the other fields, right? Don't go into the other fields, but abide here fast by my maidens. And then he says, have I not charged the young men that they shall not touch thee? And when thou art athirst, go unto the vessels and drink of that which the young men have drawn. She felt she couldn't bring herself to do it, because after all, she was just a dirty Moabite. And so she didn't want to offend them by going and drinking the same water they were drinking from. Boaz says, go and drink from it. The same water. That's what he says. And then it goes on and it says, she fell on her face, bowed herself to the ground, and said unto him, why have I found grace in thine eyes, that thou shouldst take knowledge of me, seeing I'm a stranger? She herself can't understand. How could he suddenly pour out all this kindness toward her? And Boaz says, it's been showed completely to me all that you've done to your mother-in-law since the death of your husband. How you've left your father and your mother in the land of your birth, and you've come to a people which you didn't know before now. May the Lord reward your work, and a full reward be given you of the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. Do you see what he's doing? He's showing her how wonderful her decision for the truth and for the care and the concern that she has poured out to Naomi. And he's also telling her about the fact that she's come to take refuge under the wings of God. And who's showing her an expression of that? Boaz is. Now, he hadn't made that connection, but that's exactly what he was doing. She was seeing a wonderful example of the love of God and his protection in the behavior of Boaz. That's where people learn about the love of Christ. Not from a book. They learn the details and the theoretical underpinnings and the doctrinal supports for what they see you do toward them. And so when, as a young person in a clique, you cut young people out and push them away off to the edges because they don't dress the way you do, or they don't listen to the music that you listen to, or they don't like the same whatever that you like, you're doing the wrong thing. And you need to stop doing that. You need to be inclusive and draw into your group of young people the people that are on the edge, that are having trouble and difficulty, that may not seem to align easily with the norms that you feel they should align to. Very important principle. Well, it says, "Then she said, 'Let me find favor in thy sight, my Lord, for that thou hast comforted me, and for that thou hast spoken friendly unto thine handmaid, though I be not like unto one of thine handmaidens.'" Right? What she's saying is, I'm not as good as they are. I don't measure up to these people who are your handmaidens, but I will be a servant in any way I can. Let me find favor in your sight. In other words, let me do what I can, laboring in any way I can. And he just looks at this girl, and you can just see him. This is a man who has lived through famine, lived through Bethlehem, Judah, having no praise in it, and famine, and attitudes that were all wrong. And now he looks at this girl, and in every way, she reminds him of his mother, who made the same choice and came to live in this land as a foreigner because she had faith in the God of Israel. Right? And believed. And didn't want to stay where she was and in what she was in. And so it says, Boaz said unto her, "At mealtime come thou hither and eat of the bread and dip thy morsel in the vinegar." In him is strength, the man whom God made strong for himself, invites a Gentile woman that he is protecting to come and have bread and wine with his Jewish employees. Isn't that interesting? And then it says, "And she sat beside the reapers, and he reached her parched corn, and she did eat, and was sufficed. And there was leftovers, she left thereof." Parched corn were grains that had been roasted. It was a little bit of a delicacy, something that they liked to eat, like popcorn kind of thing. And it nourished them, and it gave them the strength to go back out and do the work. So they break. They break in the middle of all of the work in order to have a breaking of bread, with bread and with wine. And then there's a special bread that involves corn that has been submitted to or put through fire. And she doesn't reach it for herself. He reaches for it and then gives it to her. She eats and there's leftovers. Surely you see parallels to Christ, to the sacrifice that only he could reach and accomplish for his Gentile Jewish bride. And that sacrificial offering is adequate not just for the needs of the people who were there at the time, but for all people. There's leftovers for everybody. It has no end for whoever will come into the truth and worship the God of Israel and become a brother or sister to the man that God made strong for himself, our Boaz, the Lord Jesus Christ. So right in the heart of this book is this wonderful picture of the atonement, the death of Christ, what was accomplished through it, the Gentiles coming in and benefiting from it, together with the Jewish people. Ruth is grafted into this group of handmaidens and servants. He grafts her in when she feels not good enough to be a part of it. He brings her in. That's a wonderful story, isn't it? And then it goes on. It says, when she was risen up to glean, Boaz commanded his young men, saying, let her glean even among the sheaves, and don't reproach her. That word reproach means to embarrass. He's telling them, don't embarrass her. Don't look at her and say, don't you think you've had enough? Don't you think it's time to go? What, you're going to glean some more? He says to them, make sure you don't embarrass her, whatever you do. Now, young men, are you the kind of ungentlemanly buffoons who don't have a concept of what it is to treat a young woman like a lady? Do you even know what that means in this wretched, shiftless generation? Do you know what that means? Because you certainly don't have much in the way of examples in the world around you. Do you know what it is to treat a woman with respect? Not just as a thing, but with respect. No matter what you are struggling with in the lusts of the eye, the lust of the flesh, and the pride of life, to treat the young women around you, who you work with or are at school with, or are in ecclesial life, or who are your sisters, your mothers, do you know how to treat them? To treat them like a lady. To do whatever you can not to make them feel small and diminished. Because if you don't, you need to learn. And if he doesn't treat you that way, what are you doing with him? A young man who you think, you know, is your boyfriend, and yet he treats you as if you're his servant. As if you are an adjunct to his ego, something that he puts on his head to make his head look nice, you know? As if you are somehow the hairspray of his life. That's what you can become. You're just a feather, a frill. He's not interested in your mind. He doesn't treat you like a person. There isn't respect for you. If that's the case, then you need to sever that link. And he needs to learn to grow up. The strength and the manhood of Boaz was demonstrated in how he treated Ruth and his employees. That is how it was demonstrated, with compassion, with respect, with concern for their and her well-being, with a quick desire to jump forward and help, and to always maintain in that person, in the young woman, a sense of self-respect without embarrassing her and diminishing her own self-worth, right? You need to bear these things in mind when you make your choices of who you choose to spend the rest of your life with. Very important principles. And then it says, verse 17, so she gleaned in the field until even. She beat out that she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. That's a lot of barley. You never got that much barley when you went gleaning in a field. And she took it up and went into the city, and her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned, and she brought forth and gave to her that she had reserved or left over after she was sufficed. What did she then do? As she was strengthened by Boaz with the parched corn and had leftovers, she went and gave the leftovers to her mother-in-law so that she would be strengthened. And as we are strengthened through fellowship, through our study, through interaction at a youth gathering like this, we need to take the leftover exuberance, the leftover enthusiasm and understanding of what we've received, and to pour it back into ecclesial life. Pour it back in to help everyone else so that they too can be encouraged. And it goes on and says, her mother-in-law said to her, "Well, where did you clean today? Where were you working? Blessed be he that paid attention and saw you and took knowledge of you." Because Naomi is a very perceptive woman. She knew somebody had shown special kindness to Ruth. And a normal Jewish man would not have done this. So she wants to know, who is he? And then it says, she said, "The man with whom I wrought today is Boaz." Naomi said unto her daughter-in-law, "Blessed be he of the Lord, who hath not left off his kindness to the living and to the dead." So what's she saying? That Boaz is still looking after the people that are gone. Even though his connection to this family is dead, because Elimelech is dead, he's still showing kindness to Elimelech. Now, if Elimelech was a strong-minded, negative kind of individual, and Boaz still showed kindness, how does that show you? You know, what does that show you about the character of Boaz? That he was a forgiving, loving, compassionate, wise individual. How did he get that way? Through the things that he suffered as a child and a young person, and growing up lonely and accepting it, but not becoming embittered. Boaz was not embittered by his experience of life. He didn't pour it out in negative interaction with the ecclesia. Neither did Naomi, neither would Ruth, neither should you. Whatever the background, color of your skin, up or down in society, money or poverty stricken, whatever your background, don't pour out bitterness and store it up inside of you. Anger can consume us. And as long as you're angry with somebody, he or she is living in your head rent-free. And it's not worth it. We need to be able to let it go so that we can become healthy in ecclesial life. Well, Naomi said unto her, "Blessed be he of the Lord." Naomi then said to her, "This man is a near kin unto us, one of our next kinsmen." And Ruth the Moabitess said, "He said to me also, 'Keep fast by my young men until they have ended all my harvest.'" And Naomi said unto Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It's good, my daughter-in-law, that thou go out with his maidens, and that they meet thee not in any other field." The Hebrew says that they fall not upon you in another field. You know what she's saying? The danger and the risk she's telling her about? You can work it out in your mind. Don't go into those other fields, because there's no telling what those men are going to do to you. So stay close to Boaz. There is safety with Boaz. That world out there may look like it's safe, but don't learn like Dinah what the world really is made of. With all of its inconsistencies and all of its fragility, ecclesial life is safe. And our life in the truth has safety with it. So we don't need to go into somebody else's field, because we always get hurt in those other fields. So she kept fast by the maidens of Boaz to glean unto the end of barley harvest and of wheat harvest, and dwelt with her mother-in-law. You see, she stayed faithful to God's ecclesia. Now, you might move from one ecclesia to another, but be faithful to the ecclesia you find yourself in where you are, right? Sometimes ecclesias have to make tough decisions, and there are tough circumstances that can arise that make us have to ask, will we stay or will we move somewhere else? And sometimes a good case can be made for moving somewhere else. But wherever we find ourselves, when we finally are in an ecclesia, build it. Strengthen it in every way you can. You are hot, tired, sleepy, and your strength is evaporating, isn't it? One third of you have been falling asleep off and on through this session. So I don't know what you're going to do. Maybe you need to run around outside without your jacket on and then come back in, because the evening session could kill you. All right.